everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Small Business Big Impact. I am your host, Jeanne Guilfoy, CEO of Meridian Credit Union, and I'm so excited to be part of this podcast because supporting small businesses is not only a huge part of what we do at Meridian, it's also a personal passion of mine. Starting a business or pursuing your passion can feel overwhelming, especially when you're navigating the unknowns of entrepreneurship. I know from experience that taking that leap comes with its challenges, but also incredible rewards. I believe it's important to share these entrepreneurs' stories to create more interest in developing businesses that not only are economically viable, but also deliver on a passion and help to solution something society needs. Today, I'm thrilled to dive into the world of social enterprises and small business with our guest, Melanie Cote, founder of Do Good Donuts. Melanie's business isn't just about donuts, although they're great. It's also about creating opportunity for young people with disabilities to gain valuable job training and life skills while building a sustainable community-driven venture. My own career has been rooted in understanding what makes people and organizations thrive, so I am excited to share her story with you today. I'm very excited to kick off our first podcast with an organization that, quite frankly, is talked about everywhere inside our organization, and that is Do Good Donuts. And Do Good Donuts is a startup employment social enterprise delivering work-based training for young adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Inspired by our desire to help young adults with disabilities, founder Melanie Cote started the enterprise to provide them with real job experience through actual on-the-job training. And I have to say, your donuts are delicious. So Melanie, thank you for joining me today.
Oh my gosh, Jeanne, I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
I think we're kindred spirits, and it's been nice to see you and your organization everywhere, and I can't wait to learn more about it. So let's start at the beginning. It's always a good place to start. So I know your daughter Alma was a big inspiration for you to start Do Good Donuts. Can you share a story of how your enterprise came to be?
Absolutely. So if we go way back, Alma was born in 2012, and it wasn't very long after she was born, at about 5 months, that we received the genetic diagnosis of Williams syndrome for Alma. In that meeting where you sit in this little room and the doctor comes in with all these papers, and over the course of the meeting that we were in, we learned obviously about the syndrome that she has and more details about the health repercussions, but they also talked about trying to prepare us for life with Alma. And in that meeting, they outlined all of the things we should expect. And those included things like we had to let go of the idea of what having a child is like and then re-embrace this new normal of raising a child with a disability. And those things included not going to a regular school, that she likely wouldn't make friends like other kids make friends, that she'd probably never be invited to birthday parties, that she wouldn't be able to get a high school diploma, that she'd likely never live independently on her own, that she wouldn't go to college or university like my husband and I had done, and that she would more than likely never have a job. Having them deliver this proclamation about all of the things she would never do, I think I was supposed to be upset. But what I heard was a challenge. Like, how do we build our relationship with her and relationships with schools and relationships with people to give her the opportunity to, in whatever way she can, access those things or feel like she's a part of those things? In hearing she would never have a job, I really wondered, like, how could they know that? There must be something that people do. And I went out into the world and I started looking for young people, show me people with Down syndrome, show me people who have a visual identity that I could recognize as living as an autistic person or as living with somebody with a developmental disability. And strangely enough, I couldn't find any. Some years later, and I was part of building a video for a large grocery chain who had become a sponsor of Special Olympics at that time. And they proclaimed that they were going to put somebody with a developmental disability or an autistic person in every single one of their stores. And I was like, this is amazing. I am off the hook. Like, if they're doing this, then things are changing. And then coincidentally, a parent called me on set to talk about their daughter. They had a teen also with Williams syndrome, and they were moving towns because she was never going to get a job. And I said, oh my gosh, hold the phone. I have the solution. Go down to your local store. This is going to be great. And they said, Melanie, you're still pretty new to this, but that's simply not how this works. That store only hires people from the football team. They're never going to hire our daughter. And if they did, they wouldn't know what to do with her. So she would only have a job for 3 months and then she would be let go and that would be the end of it. And in that moment, I realized there was a need for a place that was work, that actually had jobs, that did business with actual customers, that made actual products, where people could come to work so they could learn to work before they went to work. Because I think the biggest challenge is not actually the young people's disabilities. It's the people who are in positions to hire them don't know what to do to make them successful. And from that moment, I started to work on Do Good Donuts. That was 2016. So it's been almost 10 years.
That's amazing. What an inspiring story. And I love, even as you were talking, how you were just, I could just feel the feistiness in you. Like, no, I'm going to find a different way. I'm not going to let this happen, right? So early days, I think I read that you started in a church basement. And so what were some of the most memorable moments making donuts in a church basement?
I will say that trying to build a social enterprise from scratch is really hard without an existing organization or an existing business. First of all, it was right after the pandemic. It was the summer of 2021. And so the possibility of trying to find someone to help us get the money to fulfill the business plan and feasibility study that we spent all these years developing to make a customer-facing food business with frontline workers who would be at high risk of COVID with developmental disabilities was just a no. That was a no-go. That was not going to be the way to get started. So we applied to work in a farmer's market, and then we needed to find a spot to make the food for the farmer's market. And our local city councilor rolled by one day and noted that they were building out a community space in the church right around the corner from my house. So that's how we ended up in the church basement. Remarkably, we've had 4 years in the church basement at this point. And in the early days, it was kind of a wild experiment. Do Good Donuts is really based on a hypothesis. If we build this and provide training in the right way, can we make it easier for young people to move into jobs and make it easier for employers to know how to train them? So it's all a great experiment. On one hand, the church basement has been amazing. One, it's affordable. Two, it's a really collaborative community of people and other small organizations and interesting stuff going on in that. It's called the food hub or the neighborhood hub. But it does come with some complications because we share our space with so many other people. So we have a lot of corporate catering orders, but we can only do them on Sundays of the week. And when you only have 5 retail hours a week at a farmer's market, occasional corporate catering jobs that land on the days you can work, and the capacity of a church basement kitchen as opposed to a full production kitchen, it's really hard to increase your revenue to the point of being able to scale. So on one hand, we've hired young people. They've done amazing things, but it's just really hard. It's hard to climb out of the church basement when you can't generate enough revenue to be able to pay your own way and you're relying on outside sources for support.
So you said this is a great experiment. I like that terminology that you used. So one of the things you decided when you started this was for it to be a nonprofit model. So maybe talk a little bit about that decision and sort of what's transpired as a result of that.
When I was incorporating the business, I chose a nonprofit model. And in the beginning, I really felt like there was a need to shine a light on the social problem as equally as shining a light on the great products that we could produce that would make the work get done. I really felt at the time that the that the spotlight shone on the social issue was really valuable, and it would be more impactful as a nonprofit. But it came with a whole bunch of limitations around scaling and growth that a for-profit probably would have afforded us sooner the ability to access investment. So if I was doing it today, I would have done it the other way around.
That's a great learning, like for anybody who's listening to this, because I think, you know, I think the idea that you can still have a social purpose part of your business, you don't have to only be a not-for-profit, you can be a for-profit and still accomplish the same thing, right? And that's interesting that there's limitations to the structures, right? Because you would think a nonprofit would have, you know, would be easier, right? Because it's not, you know, it's meant to have, you know, the money reinvested in the business, right? That's the whole point. Like you can't have a bottom line. You got to put that bottom line back into the business. So you think that it would be a easier structure to pick, but you found it limiting, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I did. And I think for many of the existing nonprofits out there, it is better to be a nonprofit, but they have longevity and a track record and years of stability and a wide-bottomed governance platform. As a startup, it's really hard to access nonprofit or charitable funding because it's, you know, in many ways, it's public or donated money and they don't want to take a risk on something new. So when you're trying something new, I think the for-profit structure, it really does award people for taking a chance and trying something in that entrepreneurial spirit. Entrepreneurial spirit is a risky spirit versus what is, you know, generally deemed to be the best way for charities to run. Conservative, not wasteful of money. They don't want to have too much overhead. They don't want to have capital expenses. Don't renovate the building. Just stay in there forever. It's things that I think people don't know if they haven't really been deep in the structure.
Yeah, I did some work in previous lives with Center for Social Innovation and other organizations. And, you know, I think that's a common sort of sentiment. But I think there's also this notion that if you are a social enterprise, then you shouldn't care about profit. But what I'm hearing from you is you should absolutely care about profit. So maybe talk about how you now define a social enterprise with your, you know, lived experience for the past few years.
I think for me, a true social enterprise is something where their business model has embedded within it the impact they're trying to create. It's not an impact business that donates 25 cents from everything that they do off to another organization to carry out the mission. That the actual work of putting the mission forward is intrinsically part of the business. And I think another thing to note about sort of nonprofit and for-profit, there are revenue-generating nonprofits. And yes, the profits just go in, but there's a ton of for-profit businesses where they're not actually taking any of the profit. They're just reinvesting to growing the business. And I think it's the ability to generate enough funds to be able to reinvest them that the for-profit model allows. And I think the social enterprise is a fascinating way to do business. But I do think when there's a lot of people thinking about starting a social enterprise, some of them are thinking more about the impact and the feeling that, oh, if we're doing this good thing, obviously we're going to have all these customers and obviously people are going to come and do, you know, they're going to want to buy from us because we feed dogs or we hire people with disabilities or we, you know, everything we make the same and give it to people who need it. And I think that's also a little bit of a trap too, that the social enterprise business isn't just about the social part, that you actually need to build a thriving business because without that revenue, you can't do the thing that you were going to do. So you can't imagine or pretend or assume that just because you do things well, that customers are going to come your way. With all things being equal, and if the price is right, and if customer service is good, and if it's convenient, and if they love the product, then if apples to apples, they may choose you over the other one. But if you can't measure up to all those other things that rely that are part of their decision making, they're going to go to the other place because it's cheaper or it's more convenient or they like the product better. And that's, I think, on the flip side, mistakes that I've seen have impacted some of the other enterprises growing around me.
So sustainability, obviously, is, you know, you want this to be a long-term organization. So what strategies are you planning to look into as you ensure that long-term success of your vision, of your mission?
I think sustainability for us obviously has two paths. One's the sustainability of the training and one is the sustainability of the business. We are looking forward to our first location as being, I call it the lab, the place for us to test out operationalizing both our program and our restaurant. We have a number of people who want to franchise our business across the country. They're anxiously awaiting us to finish getting it ready to do that. And I think that being able to create more locations in either the GTA, and I think 6 of the 7 are in different provinces from us, to be able to build out what we're doing in a way that it can be replicated in other places will be the best way for us to increase our impact and give more opportunities to more people across the country, but also to increase our revenue and again, feed the engine that we need to be able to do more of what we do.
One of the things that I've always been passionate about in my first career is in HR. And so it kind of just naturally, and I love people and I'm, you know, a student of human behavior, is employee involvement, like how you get employees connected to your organization and your business and all that kind of stuff. I'd love to you for you to share, you know, how you engage the people who work for you in, or do you engage the work people that you work for you in kind of that future focused or making things better or innovation? Yeah, maybe just talk a bit about that because your workforce is unique, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do our best to make sure that all of the young people that work with us with disabilities are actively part of developing new products, of suggesting new varieties of cookies, different flavor. Every week we have a new special. Everybody gets to weigh in on that. We spend a lot of time talking about how things are going in their day-to-day roles that they're doing, whether they're working in the kitchen and making recipes or preparing the cookies, or if they're at the farmer's market or at an event, asking them, how is the software working? What do you like about it? What do you don't like about it? What makes this harder for you? What's made this easier for you? And then constantly in this, again, in this experiment time, iterating our plans and trying to see what we're doing to make sure that the widest number of people have the greatest success with the approaches that we're taking. And we've certainly shifted things over time. In our first few years, we were hand rolling and hand cutting all of our donuts and our trainee employees were part of that. And for some of the people we've worked with, their grip skills, sort of OT related stuff, they had a hard time with the rolling pin. And rather than telling us, because it's hard when you come from a group that, you know, tends to be let go from jobs or not hired into places. So they would more shy away from the task. And it took a long time to piece out that the actual rolling, they didn't find it easy and they didn't feel they were successful at it. So they wanted to leave it for someone else to do. So trying to also ensure that that line of communication is open so that we learn as much as we can. So we got a little sheeter this year so we could, you know, it was kind of crank rolled. And that took that job off the table, which meant they could do more of what they're good at. And we weren't putting a barrier in their way. So I think it's those open lines of communication. It's asking a lot of questions. Raising your hand and saying there's an issue is a soft skill that many of us learn over time. But especially with all of the stuff around neurodivergent employees has become more front and center, those soft skills. For those of us who've never thought about it, trying to piece out what they are and how they affect someone's day-to-day. And one of them is a desire to not call yourself out by asking questions. So constantly pulling information versus having it be a push situation has made a real difference in ensuring that we are building a program that is as satisfying for us to oversee as it is for our trainees to be a part of.
So you pick the franchise model. I think you just mentioned that, right? So what is your ideal future look like for Do Good Donuts?
Well, in the short term, that would be us moving into finally opening our first location. In the medium term, that's really spending 18 months to 3 years operationalizing all of the things that we have imagined for the cafe and understanding, is our business plan going to work as it's been detailed? Like really tightening it all in. And then ideally for the long term, it will be a franchise model where franchise owners will have access to a location and all of the food-based aspects of that, with a centralized training program that then supports each individual franchise with training support for their individual people and individual needs. So it would be more separation ultimately between what we have now, which is we're kind of both baking and training at the same time, that we will have more experts doing what they do, always with an eye that everything is very interconnected.
I think you've shared some of this as we've been chatting, but you know, what would you share with other entrepreneurs starting a business with a social mission? I think you talked a bit about turning back the clock and maybe picking a different structure, but maybe there's other things that you've learned that you would want to share.
The advice I would give to entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about starting a purpose-centered business, to really make sure that you're committed or invested in the purpose that you are looking to provide a solution for. It is a lot of work to try to make change. And I think if you are going to select something that just, you know, happens to be a problem that people are really interested in, or that seems to be getting a lot of attention, and you're not personally invested, you can have a really hard time overcoming all of the barriers that stand in your way. And I really think people need to do something that really matters, so that when they're up in the middle of the night wondering what they're going to do next, you know, that can be their guidepost. I think for business owners, you know, the money starts coming in, and at least they can chase, or not at least, but a lot of business owners, they see profit coming in, and then their passion becomes the model of their business, and, you know, operations and getting costs down and improving. And, you know, you can tweak and tweak and tweak and really get excited about things that are happening in your business. And when times are tough, you could say, oh, well, this worked one time. I know that we can get back there. When it's purpose-driven, you know, it's a more ethereal carrot. And yeah, you got to make sure you like carrots.
And do you have a network that of people that help you work through that? You know, I think, you know, oftentimes you hear entrepreneurs say it's kind of lonely, right? Like I'm up in the middle of the night. I've got so many things to do. I can't just focus on one thing because I got to be able to do everything because I don't have enough people. I don't have enough resources.
I do have a great network. And I think potential social entrepreneurs out there are a lot of networks that are great to tap into. We talked about CSI. That's a great network. We're incubated out of the social venture zone at TMU, which is another great connection. There are a number of organizations who work in the disability sector who aren't necessarily on the social enterprise journey, but they're definitely in the training and development journey that I can lean on. We've had amazing access to students and interns from a number of colleges and universities. That's an excellent network. And then I think I've been really lucky that there have been great organizations and community groups that have rallied around what we're doing. Meridian has been an excellent partner to me. Every time I've had a question or I've needed to call, whoever's over there has been a huge help to us.
So I was at a breakfast session yesterday, and the topic was, you know, our productivity challenge in Canada, right? That we need to create more businesses. We need to grow our economy. We need to have, you know, more businesses created and more entrepreneurs growing. And I think with, you know, in order for us to be able to afford to live in this country and to, you know, get the right healthcare and the right education and housing and all the stuff that we know are problems right now. So I think about your business and I think, wow, you really are, you know, I always call it the double word score. You're really hitting the double word score. You know, you're an entrepreneur out there trying to make it work, hiring people, giving them jobs, and you know, shining a light on the fact that, you know, there's an untapped market of people who could be employed. And, you know, we're always talking about having not enough people, and you're demonstrating if you put the person with the right kinds of tasks, they can be equally or more productive, right? And so I really wanted to thank you for the work that you do and for sharing your journey with us today.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It's always nice to have somebody else on Keen Do Good. And I really appreciate you. I thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm equally appreciative of the work you guys do over at Meridian.
It was such a pleasure to have Melanie on the show and hear about her plans to expand Do Good Donuts through franchising. What an incredible way to scale purpose and impact. One of the biggest challenges for any small business is securing funding in those early years. Building on Melanie's advice, I encourage aspiring entrepreneurs to explore your funding options carefully and choose partners who are as invested in your success as you are. For those of you looking to start a social enterprise, make sure you understand the pros and cons of how you set it up. Also, I would encourage you to go talk to your banker and know what the three things are that you will need to get a loan. Financial statements and some sort of personal guarantee will likely be part of that requirement. To support Melanie and learn more about Do Good Donuts, you can find links to their website and socials in the show notes. Join us on this journey by subscribing to the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time on Small Business Big Impact.